All right, we've covered the basics of meiosis. Now let's look at it in cartoon form in slide 7. This looks very similar to the mitosis slide that we looked at in the previous chapter, but there's two divisions, of course, remember, whereas there wasn't in mitosis. So meiosis 1 first, and then meiosis 2, which is why you end up with 4 cells, not just 2. But there's a couple things I haven't mentioned about meiosis that are important. If you think about sex, we've already talked about the fact that sex mixes the genomes of two parents, and therefore it produces offspring that are genetically brand new, meaning the genetic makeup of sexual offspring has never existed in nature before. It's new combinations. And that wouldn't happen. Well, you can think of sex as kind of like shuffling the deck, genetically speaking. And that wouldn't make any difference, shuffling the deck, if there weren't already some genetic variation to begin with. In other words, if the two parents are genetically identical, shuffling wouldn't matter, right? You would still have identical offspring. And in the card analogy, if you had a deck of nothing but 3 of hearts, you can shuffle it as many times as you want, you're going to get a handful of 3 of hearts. So sex works because there is already genetic variation. There are already individuals that differ in their genetic makeup. What is the original source of the different DNA? Why is it that there's different versions of DNA? Why aren't we all just genetically identical copies of the original successful cells that we sprang from? Right. Mutation is the original source of all genetic variation. And that's the source of variation even in asexual species, right? They aren't necessarily identical. I mean, they're not identical forever, because eventually mistakes happen and offspring will be different from the parent for that mutation reason. But anyway, because mutation happens accidentally now and then, that's why we have different versions of DNA, and that's why parents in a sexual species will be different from each other, and when they combine their DNA will create an even more different, brand new sequence of DNA. Well, so we can say, in other words, that sex amplifies genetic variation because of how it works. And there are 3 major sources of this additional variation that sex provides. And I'll list them in the order in which they occur. The first 2 of these occur in meiosis, as we've already studied. But they occur in this order. First is crossing over, which I'll explain in a minute. Second is independent assortment. And then the third source is random fertilization. Now, not only do the first 2 occur in meiosis, but they also both occur in specifically meiosis 1. The very first part of meiosis, of course, is prophase 1, which is what we're looking at on the left here. And first of all, before we talk more about this, what is the N we're looking at here? What is N for this species? Right. N always refers to how many different kinds of chromosomes there are in the species, right? There's 3 different kinds here. Large, medium, and small. What's the ploidy for this first cell? The cell that enters meiosis?
Diploid.
It's diploid, because there's 2 of each of those 3 types. 2 big ones, 2 medium ones, 2 small ones. 1 red and 1 blue for each. Okay, well, prophase, metaphase, anaphase, those are all the same names as we've already learned for mitosis. There's subphases named the same way in meiosis as mitosis, and in each part of meiosis. So there's prophase 1, prophase 2, and so on. But what happens in meiosis, of course, is different from what happens in mitosis. Some of it's the same, though, for prophase. You have this condensing of chromatin, which is why you're seeing the chromosomes. But a really important difference between the two is that a diploid cell that enters mitosis has, of course, by virtue of being diploid, two of each kind of chromosome. Two number ones, let's say, just to start with. Well, the two number ones in a cell entering mitosis do not care where each other are. They're acting just as individual chromosomes. But in meiosis, the two homologous chromosomes, meaning the two number ones and the two number twos, find each other and come together. That does not happen in mitosis. And this coming together and joining temporarily is called synapsis. Now, we can see that these homologous pairs have already formed, meaning the two homologs, the two of the same type, two number ones, two number twos, and two number threes, have synapsed. They've come together. But not only do they come together, they cross over. So that's that first source of additional variation that sex provides. Keep in mind that a homologous pair is made up of two replicated chromosomes. So each replicated chromosome is already two chromatids big, and the two red chromatids are identical to each other, but the two blue chromatids, although they're identical to each other, are not identical to the red ones. All right? Anyway, the red replicated chromosome and the blue replicated chromosome of the same type come together and they cross over, which means exactly what it sounds like. One of the chromatids of the blue one physically crosses over one of the chromatids of the red one. And they are not identical, right? Because they came from different parents of this cell. Well, it's not just that they cross over. When they cross over, they swap the DNA beyond that crossover point. So this red DNA is traded for this blue DNA. All right? By the way, the place where that happens, the point of crossover, is called a chiasma. That's the singular. The plural is chiasmata. Notice it can happen more than once just for the same homologous pair. Okay, so the moment that crossing over happens, you already have two sequences of DNA that have never existed. Because one of those chromatids is red with some blue in it now, and the other one is blue with some red in it now. Neither one of those existed before. It's a mixture of the two parents' genes. Okay? Well, not only is this an additional source of variation, but compared to the other two, it is huge in its variation, in its number of possibilities. A chromosome is millions of nucleotides long. A chiasma can form basically anywhere. So think about how many different places a chiasma can form if you have millions of nucleotides long. All right, and they just randomly occur. Well, to put it in perspective, how many possibilities there are. If there were only about 230 places where they could do this, which is tiny compared to how many there actually are, then the number of possibilities just for that one homologous pair, this is ignoring all the other chromosomes, would be 2 to the 230th power. Which, the reason I chose 230 is that roughly 2 to the 230th power, that number of possibilities for crossing over of just one homologous pair, is roughly equal to the number of atoms in the universe. Which is a huge, huge number, right? And That's number of, I mean, it's way more than that because there's more than 230 possibilities for just one homologous pair, plus you have all the other ones. So, yeah, in other words, you're creating a deck of possible cards that is almost infinitely big just for crossing over. And that's only part of the additional variation that exists because of sex. But that happens in prophase. Metaphase, or prophase one. Metaphase one, of course, involves a lining up, but as we discussed, it involves lining up not of individual replicated chromosomes, but tetrads. That's why there are N things lining up here, not two N things. Okay? It's pairs. Well, this brings us to the second source of additional variation, which is independent assortment. So if you think about this phrase, just the word assortment by itself, in this sense, refers to the way in which a tetrad lines up at the metaphase plate. Just a single tetrad, one homologous pair, in other words, if you think about it, is like flipping a coin. It has two possible ways it can line up. Either red up and blue down, or blue up and red down, in this cartoon version. Right? Those are the only two possibilities. Well, independent assortment, the full phrase, refers to the fact that how one tetrad lines up is not at all affected by or dependent on how the other tetrads line up. They're each flipping their own coin, which is why in this example, two of them landed red up, one of them randomly landed red down. Well, this is going to be another source of variation because the way they assort or line up determines which of the two cells they're going to split into gets which chromosome. And red and blue are not the same as each other, remember. Okay? Well, it's still a pretty big number on this, but it's not nearly as big as for crossing over. If you think about it, though, if you have an N of 1, independent assortment really doesn't add any variation because if you're flipping one coin, it's not going to matter whether it's blue up and red down or red up and blue down. One of the cells is going to get the red one, one of them is going to get the blue one. And so it's no different. No difference. But if you have two or more, then there can be multiple possibilities. And in general, mathematically, the number of possibilities due just to independent assortment itself is 2 to the n minus 1. So notice if n is 1, it would be 2 to the 0, which is only one possibility. But for humans, for instance, where n is 23, that means there's 2 to the 22nd power of number of different ways that they can just line up at metaphase. And I forget exactly how much that is, roughly 4 million, either 4 million or 8 million, something like that, which is a fairly high number, but it's tiny compared to the number of possible crossings over. Well, anyway, since they're both happening, that means the real number is that almost infinite number from crossing over times 8 million. Makes it even bigger. And so that really, whatever that huge, huge number is the number of possible different kinds of gametes that a parent can make. All right? And they're all genetically different from each other, coming from the same parent. Well, this is why you could live for millions of years. Well, just take a human male as an example. A human male makes, once he hits maturity, makes millions of sperm cells every day and will make millions every day for decades. Despite all of those many, many, many millions, the chances of two sperm from the same male being genetically identical to each other in that lifetime is effectively zero. Because there are so many possible ways. And in fact, you could live for millions of years and never make the same sperm twice. There are so many possibilities. And the same thing for females. She has just as many possibilities for eggs. She doesn't make millions per day. She makes only the ones that she made before she was even born. But there's still that many possibilities. Okay, so just to finish this additional variation discussion, let me talk about the third one, the third source of additional variation, which I said is random fertilization. If the numbers aren't already ridiculously huge, they're going to get even bigger. Random fertilization refers to the fact that when two sexual parents have their gametes combine in fertilization, which doesn't necessarily mean they're mating, right? Sexual species don't ever need to come into contact with each other. I mean, the parents don't. Plants don't. But their gametes have to somehow get together. Anyway, if that happens, random fertilization refers to the fact that fertilization randomly picks a gamete from one parent and randomly picks a gamete from the other parent. So this almost infinite deck of cards that each parent has, representing their number of possible gametes, means a zygote is randomly choosing a card from one infinite deck and randomly choosing a card from the other infinite deck, almost infinite, which means the total number of possible two card hands, is almost infinity times almost infinity. And this is why you don't see identical strangers or identical non-twin siblings. When you have identical twins, that's because a mistake was made. That started out as one zygote that was supposed to be one human, and it split into two, each of which was treated as a zygote. It's not because it happened twice the same way. Okay, so we've talked about the rest of this. Notice, by the way, that not only are these independently assorting in metaphase, but these tetrads are already unique because some of them are partly blue and partly red because of crossing over. So we still use the word sister chromatids since they're connected, but they're really no longer identical because of crossing over. That's why there's a mixture of red and blue here. But since it's tetrads that line up in metaphase one, it's tetrads or homologs of those tetrads that split apart in anaphase one. That's when you have the reduction in ploidy. Because now this cell is going to have just one of each. This cell is going to have just one of each. That's haploid. We need that second round of division, though. We need meiosis two because even though these are already haploid, they're haploid with still replicated chromosomes, which is enough DNA for two cells. So they have to have meiosis two, which is just like mitosis, to do the same thing mitosis accomplishes, which is to line up those replicated chromosomes and split the chromatids apart so that now the four cells that result each have just one of each cell, each chromosome, they're haploid, plus each of those chromosomes is non-replicated. Yeah?
Right. Until the telophase one? Or on
cytokinesis one is what officially makes them separate cells. And at that point, they're already haploid because the split is not between chromatids. The split is between homologs. Each cell is going to get one homolog, the other cell is going to get the other homolog. So we stop using the word homologous pair after meiosis one because they're in different cells at that point, right? Seems like there was something I was going to say. It must not have been important enough to remember. All right, if we go to eight, we can see a quick summary of the differences between mitosis and meiosis. One difference, of course, is that there's only one cell division in mitosis. I remember what I was going to say. Yes, it is definitely true that you start meiosis with a diploid cell because you have to be diploid in order to split your ploidy in half, right? But for mitosis, it can be a diploid or a haploid cell that enters it. It's just that whatever the ploidy is in mitosis, the two cells that result are going to have that same ploidy. Mitosis maintains the ploidy. It makes identical copies, genetically identical. And it does that in one division event, which is why the final result is just two cells for mitosis. But what lines up, importantly, and this is a diploid example, what lines up for a diploid cell in metaphase of mitosis are 2N individual replicated chromosomes. The two number twos do not care where each other are. No synapsis occurs. Meiosis, on the other hand, involves two division events, which is why you end up making four cells overall. But in meiosis one, what lines up at metaphase are not individual replicated chromosomes. Instead, it's N pairs of homologous chromosomes. N tetrads, in other words. And they cross over. Well, they've crossed over already previously in prophase, I'm sorry. But they independently assort in metaphase. And then it's those homologs that separate from each other. So these two cells in the after meiosis one are already haploid, but they still have replicated chromosomes. And each of those undergoes meiosis two, just like mitosis, to line up those replicated chromosomes and then split the chromatids apart into unreplicated chromosomes that go into the four cells. And those four cells, for us, would be gametes, called gametes. They're sex cells. All right. I'm not going to read the summary to you in slide 9. We've covered all that, but it's good to have that to study with if you want. Let's go on to 10. How I've described things happening is how things usually happen. It usually goes off without a hitch, in other words. Pretty low error rate, but there is not a zero error rate, of course. Accidents do happen. And before we talk about the accidents, let me say that the way it properly happens, meaning lining up and then separating, is called disjunction. To disjoin is another word for to separate. And disjunction is just the noun form of the verb disjoin. So disjunction is what normally happens. But you can have an error called non-disjunction, which of course is a failure to disjoin, failure to separate. And since meiosis involves two separation events, the error can happen, non-disjunction that is, can happen in either of the two phases. Oh, I'm sorry, we're on the wrong slide. Everything I told you is true, but that applies to the next slide. Let me make yourself a little note. Let me tell you what's actually on slide 10. This is a schematic representation of independent assortment, which happens, remember, in metaphase. This is for an N of what? No, it's an N of 2. N always means how many different kinds of chromosomes are in a cell. There's two kinds here, not four. There are four chromosomes, but not four kinds. Right? There's a big and a small. Those are the two kinds. That's N. What's the ploidy? It's diploid. Okay. But anyway, the point of the slide is independent assortment, which I've already discussed. Well, like I said, there's only one possibility when n is 1. Here we have n is 2, so there should be 2 to the 2 minus 1, or 2 to the 1, which is 2 possibilities. And these are the two possibilities. The two possibilities are that they can assort so that both blues are going to one cell, both reds are going to the other, or the only other possibility is that one of them is going to get a red and a blue, the other one's going to get a blue and a red. All right? But the bigger N is, the more possibilities there are just due to independent assortment. Slide 11 illustrates crossing over. And the book should have had these in the reverse order because crossing over occurs before independent assortment. But you get a better view of what's happening here, right? These are this is one tetrad, a homologous pair of chromosomes. They synapse, cross over, and swap their genetic material. So these, so the, this mostly blue one, after crossing over, consists of non-identical chromatids at this point, because one of those chromatids has mixed some of its DNA with the non-sister chromatid of the other homologue. Yeah.
Is that the point where they...
Yeah, it's the position where it crosses over.
What would that section be called?
You mean where they swap? I have never heard a name specifically for that section. It might exist, but I don't know it.
The crossover.
I don't know. Okay, so just for crossing over alone, that's just one reason why all of the four cells that are eventually produced are genetically different from each other, as well as being genetically different from the original cell. Oh, that's the end of the chapter. We must be talking about non-disjunction in a different chapter. But we'll get there.